This is Audible.
Star Wars: Scoundrels by Timothy Zahn. Chapter 13. Finally, the order came. Practically before that single long-awaited syllable had finished coming through his comlink, Kel had the Z-95 in the air, the combination of repulsor lifts and main engines jamming him back into his seat, the indicator lights on his control board looking like a bleed-through of the stars above and the city lights to both sides. The waiting was over. He was going into battle. Maybe not the intensity of combat that haunted both his dreams and his nightmares, but combat nonetheless. And with the end of the waiting came the end of at least some of the doubts. He'd worried that he would hesitate, or worse, freeze. He hadn't. He'd worried that he might not be able to handle a ship that, for all his earlier confident assurances, he'd had little experience with outside of game simulators. It seemed to be working fine. He'd worried that he might turn tail and abandon the mission. So far, that hadn't happened either. He'd worried that he might not be able to face death for the sake of his teammates. That one, unfortunately, still lay ahead. And if and when it came down to that, he still had no idea how he would react. But he didn't have to know. Not yet. Courage wasn't a matter of taking the whole mountain in a single massive leap. Courage was taking it one step at a time, doing what was necessary now, preparing for the next step, and refusing to worry about whether some step in the future would be the one that would break him. He was in the air, flying his fighter with adequate skill and heading in the right direction. Three steps down, one at a time to go. He keyed the Z-95's comm. Chewie? There was an acknowledging roar, wordless confirmation that the Wookiee was in position behind him. And maybe that was the real secret to courage, Kel realized suddenly. Someone at your back. And the assurance that you weren't facing the mountain alone. He straightened his shoulders. Enough philosophy. He had a fighter beneath him, a set of weapons at his fingertips, and teammates who needed rescuing. Stay with me, he told Chewie. An order or a plea, he wasn't sure which. I'm going in. Wolve and Folks had been cleared by the Falling's men, and the conversation had shifted over to the Falling himself when a group of ground-floor windows exploded inward, and the whole factory lit up with a multiple blaze of sustained blaster fire.
No, no, no,
Zerba moaned, hunching down as if trying to disappear into his seat.
Lando, what's he doing?
Getting us out of here, Lando said between clenched teeth. Here, get these off me.
Get us out of here how?
Zerba demanded, twisting his hands free of his binders and leaning over to work on Lando's restraints.
In body sacks? He's gonna bring the whole place down on us.
He's got a plan,
Lando insisted, peering up at the ceiling. So far, the blaster fire was just tearing up the windows and flying harmlessly over everyone's heads. Was all the noise and fury supposed to be a diversion, with Han expecting them to grab their airspeeder and make a run for it? Because if that was the plan, it was a rotten one. None of the broken windows was nearly big enough for the airspeeder to get through. Even if it was, this particular vehicle's design meant he or Zerba would have to get out of the back seat and go around to the driver's side door to get to the controls. And he doubted that Wolve or Folks or the Falling would just sit by and let that happen. Speaking of whom...
Hurry it up,
Lando bit out, craning his neck to look through the airspeeder's canopy. At the first salvo, the bomb expert and the Falling had dived back inside their vehicle, with the rest of the group taking up defensive positions. Wolve and Folks had joined them, but now both were looking back toward their own vehicle. And even 50 meters away, with all those flashes glinting off the airspeeder's canopy, obscuring their vision, Lando could see that they'd spotted the fact that one of their prisoners was free of his binders, and the second soon would be.
Why? Zerba countered. You got someplace else you want to be?
Yeah, anywhere but here,
Lando shot back. Wolve was looking back and forth between the different vectors of blaster fire sizzling the air above his head, probably looking for a pattern. The minute he figured out the safe timing, Lando suspected. He would be heading their way. Across the factory, one of the building's mid-wall supports abruptly snapped as the fire through the adjacent windows sliced across its edge. The section of roof directly overhead slumped a couple of meters. The sudden change in pressure snapping two smaller supports and sending pieces of metal shrapnel arcing across the open space to rain down bare meters from the three airspeeders.
"Anywhere but here sounds great," Zerba snarled. "Only how are we supposed to get there? This place is..."
He broke off as another support snapped and scattered itself across the landscape.
"He's a death trap," he finished. "What's Han trying to do? Kill us?"
Lando was still trying to come up with an answer to that one, when with a deafening crash, a group of windows below the ceiling blew in. The place was coming down all right, and while the Fallen's airspeeders were probably armored, his and Zerba's definitely wasn't. He looked up toward the blast, wondering if any of the debris was coming toward them, wondering if he would see the chunk of wall or girder that would end up killing him. The fireball of the explosion was still swirling through the cloud of smoke when a Z-95 headhunter shot through the opening into the factory. Kel winced as bits and pieces of the wall he'd just blown open slammed and rattled against the Z-95's canopy. He definitely cut that one a bit too close. Something to remember for the next time. Assuming there was a next time. He'd barely cleared the blast debris when he was suddenly being hammered by heavy blaster fire raking across his underside. His first reflexive assumption was that Han or Dozer had glitched their targeting. But a second later, he realized that the attack was coming from the men crouched beside the other two airspeeders down there. A heavy attack, too. Those were seriously high-powered blasters they were firing. Way too powerful for civilian equipment. Even the Z-95's armor, designed for full-bore space combat, was creaking and popping under the onslaught. It would have been highly satisfying to zoom to the other end of the factory, spin his fighter around, and nail them all with a counter-barrage from his KX-5 laser cannons. But he didn't dare. The E-Web attack had showed how dangerously unstable the factory was. The engine backblast and flash heating required to pull off that kind of attack could bring the whole place down. It would be a pretty pathetic rescue if Lando and Zerba ended up crushed to death because they were stuck in that eggshell of an airspeeder. Fortunately, that problem was about to be fixed. "Bogies at 65 and 76, he called out, pitching the fighter a few degrees as he shot past for a better view of the factory floor. He took a moment to glance at his display, the factory schematic that Rochelle had sent and the targeting grid Chewbacca had overlaid on it. "Friendlies at 58. Drop target 67. Repeat, drop target 67. The far wall was coming up fast. The plan was for him to fire another burst, make a new hole, and get out before he got himself shot down. Instead, he pulled back on the throttle, doing a quick skid turn to kill his forward momentum and coast to a stop. It was risky, and Chewie probably would have something to say about it later if they all survived. But Han's plan was so insane, and the execution so impossible, that he just had to stick around and see for himself if it actually worked. Some things in life really were worth risking everything for. The rest? Well, it was always a judgment call. Kel had blown through the wall and disappeared inside. He'd called out the targeting zone to Chewie, and the E-Web covering fire hadn't yet brought down the whole factory. So far, things were going according to plan. And now, from out of the gloom, blazing its way across the night sky, was the Falcon. Han clenched his hand into a fist. Chewie was one of the best pilots he'd ever seen, but this was the sort of gamble even Han would normally dismiss out of hand. But when you had no other choice, you had to go with it.
"Come on, Chewie,"
he muttered under his breath, as the ship shot toward the hole in the wall Kel had made. The opening was way too small for the Falcon to fit through, of course, and there was no way any of them was going to try enlarging it, not with the shape the building was in. Even letting Kel in and out had been a calculated risk. But Chewie didn't need to make the hole any bigger. All he needed to do was to play a single round of Galaxy's biggest game of Hit the Hut. And he had exactly one chance to get it right. The Falcon was gaining a little altitude now, and Han could hear Chewbacca easing back on the throttle as he fine-tuned his run. A quick surge of frustration and guilt washed through Han as he watched. By all rights, that should be him up there. He should be the one flying his ship and making this work. But if he'd taken that job, who would he have left to organize the ground action? Dozer? Winter? No. For better or worse, whether it made sense or not, he was the leader of this group. Down here, where the blaster bolts were flying the thickest, was where he needed to be. Nearly there. A little more altitude. A bit less. Slowing just a fraction more. Shifting the approach vector just a shade. And then Chewbacca was there, yanking up the bow with a fraction of a second to spare, the ship angling up and over the edge of the building and shooting off towards space. And only because Han was specifically looking for it did he spot the squat metal cylinder that popped out of the rear of the ship and arced neatly through the smoking hole into the factory. Lando's first horrible thought was that the rumble approaching from outside was a missile, heading in to level the building and disintegrate every shred of evidence of what had happened here. But at the last millisecond, the dark bulk flashed past the ragged opening the Z-95 had made, angling upward and roaring over the roof. He felt the whole place shake with the backwash, and a fresh rain of debris began falling on them. An extra big piece of ceiling tile hit Lando's side of the canopy, shattering it and sending bits of transparasteel flying. Without warning, something big and solid slammed into the floor directly between their airspeeder and the Falling's men, the impact sending up a huge cloud of dust and Duracrete chips. Lando winced back, wondering if it was in fact the missile nose cone he'd been anticipating a few seconds earlier. It wasn't a missile. It was a CEC Class 1 escape pod, the kind carried aboard the Falcon. And with that, he finally got it. "Come on," he snapped to Zerba, forcing open the airspeeder door and rushing out into the dust and falling tiles and metal shards. Running bent over at the waist to stay out of the blaster fire still pouring through the windows, he headed for the escape pod. He was halfway there when Zerba caught up, the cryodex case clutched tightly to his chest.
"Where are we going?"
he panted.
"Inside," Lando told him.
He dropped to one knee beside the pod and cycled the hatch.
"It's Han's idea of armored sanctuary."
"But it's only a one-passenger pod."
"It'll be tight," Lando agreed as the hatch popped open. "You could stay out here if you'd rather."
Zerba didn't bother to reply.
"They're in!" Kel shouted toward the comm. "Hatch is sealed."
"Great,"
Han called back. And for the first time in hours, Kel could hear some actual relief in his voice.
"Kel, Dozer, take it down."
With a suddenness that caught Deja completely by surprise, the multiple E-Web blaster fire hammering the factory shifted from covering to demolition. His comlink signaled.
"Deja, what's going on out there?"
Deshul demanded.
"Police nets are lighting up from here to Grackleton with reports of a firefight in your area."
"Oh, it's definitely a firefight," Deja confirmed, peering at the factory from what he hoped would continue to be a safe distance. "But at the moment, it's seriously one-sided. E-Web's on the outside, a Z-95 headhunter on the inside. And some variety of Corellian light freighter," he didn't add, frowning as he searched the sky. The freighter had made a single run at the place and done nothing except veer off at the last second, and then headed off and hadn't been back. Either he was on some really wide return circle, or he'd turned tail and made a run for it. The first didn't make much sense. The second seemed way out of sync with what he'd seen of Inger's group. And then he got it. The freighter pilot hadn't gotten cold feet. He'd done whatever he was supposed to do for the operation. Distraction, reconnaissance, whatever, and then had taken off because he was hurrying to get back to the spaceport before the police and port authorities reacted to all the noise and started paying attention to what was happening in the sky above them. Which meant the freighter was the one item Inger's team had brought out here that they weren't intending to abandon after the rescue. Interesting. He wished now that he'd gotten a better look at it. With a distant woof, a section of factory roof caved in, followed immediately by a partial collapse of the north wall. The attackers seemed to be deliberately bringing down the building, which begged the question of how they expected their kidnapped teammates to survive. Maybe they were already dead. Maybe that was what the freighter and the Z-95 had been sent in to confirm. Another section of the roof went, this piece apparently hitting some old tank on the way down and sending up a plume of gas that looked green and vaguely evil in the reflected light from the blaster fire. A second part of the northern wall collapsed. And with that, the kidnappers had apparently had enough. Even as the blaster fire continued to wreak havoc, Deja saw the three airspeeders shoot out from the freshly gaping holes and claw for altitude. This time, he was ready and got some good image captures with his electrobinoculars. Whoever they were, he should be able to track them down.
Deja, what's happening?
Looks like it's mostly over, Deja said, as the E-Web fire came to a halt. The Z-95 had now emerged and was settling to the ground nearby. And he could see three figures hurrying toward the wrecked building from different directions.
But it wouldn't hurt to keep the police away from the area for a few more minutes. Can you manage that without showing your hand?
My hand, yes. But your team's hand may already be dead. If the kidnappers were indeed corrupt police, I don't know how they're going to spin this incident without Villachor and Kazati concluding that Inger is connected with someone official.
I don't know either, Deja said. But I'm looking forward to finding out.
Lando already had the hatch open and was working his way out of the escape pod when Han and the others reached them.
You okay?
Han asked, offering a hand. It seemed to him that Lando hesitated a fraction of a second longer than he needed to before taking the proffered hand. But his grip was solid enough.
Thanks, he grunted, as Han helped him out. Nice move, by the way. I gather that was Chewie in the Falcon?
Yeah,
Han said, looking around. The devastation looked even worse in here than it had from the outside.
Figured if you got winged by the pod, you wouldn't be as mad at him as you would have been at me.
Probably not, Lando half turned.
Zerba?
I'm here.
A thin hand popped into view from the hatch.
A little help, please.
Hand me the case,
Dozer instructed, crouching down beside the pod. The hand disappeared and re-emerged with the cryodex case. Dozer took it and handed it behind him to Winter, then helped Zerba out.
Thanks,
Zerba puffed. He turned a baleful eye on Han.
Don't ever do that again.
Which part? Han asked. Shooting the bad guys off your back or saving your life?
Zerba considered.
Okay, good point,
he conceded, sounding marginally mollified.
Can we get out of here now?
Sure,
Han said.
Dozer, take him to your airspeeder and get him back to the suite. Kel can go with you too.
We leave the gear?
Dozer asked.
All of it, Han confirmed. Winter and me'll go to the spaceport and wait for Chewie.
Some orders, he reflected, only had to be given once. Dozer was already picking his way through the debris, Lando and Zerba right behind him.
Interesting tactic, Winter commented.
Han turned. She was staring at the dented escape pod, an odd expression on her face.
They're designed to handle deep space, atmo penetration, and bumpy landings. I figured they could hold off anything the kidnappers had with them.
He waved a hand upward at the stars showing through the wrecked roof.
And that, too.
It did seem to do the job,
Winter agreed.
I was thinking more of what would have happened if Chewbacca had missed.
Lando would probably never want to see me again,
Han said.
Come on, let's go see if Chewie's made it back down yet.
So you have no idea who they were?
Tavia asked, as she handed Lando a drink.
Only that there was a Farlene in the group, Lando said,
taking a careful sip. Cognac was a notoriously unpredictable drink, the taste and quality varying widely between systems and often even across different regions of the same world. Thankfully, Tavia had picked a good, smooth one.
No idea whether it was Dozer's friend Lord Azeel or this Kazadi person Inja's contact claims is hiding in Marblewood.
Not sure it matters which it was, Kel said. They're both on the same team, aren't they?
He wasn't either of them, Zerpa said.
He was gripping his own cognac glass with both hands, clearly still shaken by the evening's events.
He was probably someone's bodyguard.
How do you know?
Lando asked, thinking back. He hadn't noticed any weapons or body armor that might have led Zerpa to that conclusion.
He was young, Zerpa said. Way too young to be anyone with that kind of prominence.
He ran back inside the airspeeder when the firing started, Lando pointed out.
He got the bomb guy into the airspeeder when the firing started, Zerpa corrected. Then he got in, but he left the door open.
So that he could direct their return fire, Winter murmured. He did a decent job of it, too. Even firing blind, they were able to take out one of the E-webs before Kel got inside. Well, whoever they weren't with Villachor,
Bink said positively.
Neither Shakoa nor any of the other security guys I saw showed the slightest indication that they knew something big was going on. They must not have been monitoring the police comms then,
Tavia pointed out.
The whole network was going crazy with all the reports. I'm kind of surprised that they didn't drop the hammer on you before you got out of there.
What, charge in on a Black Sun interrogation? Lando countered. Not likely.
So what does all this mean for the mission?
Inger asked. He sounded calm, but the restless twitching of his fingers betrayed his tension.
Nothing really, Han said. Whoever was behind it, all he knows is that Lando's got an impressive organization behind him. That's the story we were pitching in the first place.
Except now that Lando's been tagged, he needs to lie low,
Bing said.
I guess Dozer's up next. Or you, Han.
It seemed to Lando that Han's lip twitched just a bit.
Probably, Han conceded.
We can talk about that later.
He turned to Rochelle.
You ready?
Yes, Rochelle said, her eyes looking troubled. But I don't think you're going to like it.
Ready with what? Zerpa asked.
The analysis of the sensor data from the card you planted, Han told him, looking around. Dozer?
Right here,
Dozer said, emerging from the kitchen hallway with a sandwich in his hand.
Rescue work makes me hungry.
He dropped onto the couch beside Tavia, forcing her to scoot to the side to make room.
Ready.
Han gestured to Rochelle. She tapped her datapad, and the image of a mostly rectangular room appeared in the air above the holoprojector.
Villachor's vault, she identified it. As we've already noted, it was built into the junior ballroom. Note the curved corners and conversation alcoves.
Which are probably guard posts now, Lando murmured.
Mostly,
Rochelle confirmed.
Also note the high, undulating ceiling. That's the ballroom's original glitter coat up there, by the way, with the layer of armor plate we discussed earlier set into the between floors gap above it. Glitter coat, huh?
Bink asked sourly.
Terrific.
What's glitter coat? Kel asked.
The fancy man's interior decor of choice,
Bink told him.
Nice, smooth, resilient. Glitters in every type of lighting. You get the idea. Problem is, it's impossible to cut through without scattering clouds of white, sparkly flakes all over the place. Which means no popping in, grabbing the loot, and popping back out without anyone noticing,
Tavia added.
Once we start the operation, our footprints will be all over it. What kind of security has he got inside the vault?
Bink asked.
Oh, you're going to love this, Rochelle said.
She keyed her datapad again, and a dozen figures appeared around the edges of the vault.
Remember those Zed police droids Kel said Villachor's got?
Here's where they hang out.
Plus the 10 on guard outside the door, Lando said. Armed with blasters and Tholcorp OT-7 neuronic whips, just to make things interesting.
Getting past that group was the first step in the entry procedure.
Chewbacca turned to Han and warbled a question.
I don't know, Han said. Kel, you know any way to knock out a Zed?
I'd have to look into it, but I'm sure it's possible. Kel waved a hand. Of course, anything's possible. It's in the execution where you get hung up.
A high power jab in the motivator or memory core will do it for most droids,
Bing pointed out. Hard to do through the kind of armor Zeds have, though, Kel said.
And don't forget the whips, Lando added. Those things pack a serious punch, and Villachor would hardly give them to his guards if they could be used against them. That implies extra electrical shielding.
Actually, it's worse than that, Kel said. Remember I told you the Zeds I saw had sheathings on their upper arms, thighs, and waists? Those limb parts are where the droids have thin, parallel cylinders instead of a single, wider limb part. And the waist is where the torso also gets extra narrow.
So?
Bink asked. So with those sheathings in place, you can't tell whether they've got the original parallels in torso tube or something wider, Kel said. In other words, you can't tell whether or not that's really a Zed.
Whoa,
Dozer said, his sandwich momentarily forgotten.
Are you saying some of those Zeds might actually be armored human guards?
Exactly, Kel said. It's really pretty clever. You go in with a tight spectrum motivator punch, like Bink said, all set to knock out a droid. Only the human inside the armor isn't bothered in the slightest, and knocks you on your butt.
Well, something designed to stun or paralyze a human won't work on a droid, Han said.
And only Villachor will know which are which, Kel said.
Speaking of droids, is there a way to deal with those floating cam droids outside?
Dozer asked.
I don't like the idea of someone in a monitor room watching everything we do in there.
Not a problem, Tavia assured him. We've got a gadget designed to fog their view. Not enough to trigger any alarms or self-diagnostic sequences, but enough to wipe out facial recognition. With all the dust, extra body heat, and repulsor containment fields they'll have out there, they should assume that's all that's bollocksing their holocams.
Is that going to be good enough?
Dozer asked, looking at Han.
It should be, Han said. We'll just have to make sure we don't stand out of the crowd.
Until we need to, Lando murmured.
Right, Han nodded.
So how do we get into the grounds? Kel asked.
Already done, Bink said calmly. I planted it 2 days ago, on our first trip in.
You could have told us,
Dozer growled.
Bink shrugged. I assumed it would be obvious.
Let's get back to the Zeds, Zerba said. Do we have any idea whether those were droids or humans outside the vault? More important, do we have any idea what kind of entry code they were running? There wasn't anything obvious I could see.
You're right. It wasn't obvious, Rochelle agreed. Turns out there was a scent on Villachor's fingers that the Zed was sniffing.
A scent? Lando echoed, feeling his mouth drop open. You mean like perfume?
Cologne, actually, Rochelle said. Either Resi 8 or Resi 10. The two formulas are very similar.
Kel looked at Tavia. You've got to be kidding. You put in a scent sniffer?
Tavia shrugged. Han said full spectrum,
she reminded him.
We gave him full spectrum.
Though we were mostly looking for airborne material cues,
Winter added.
We didn't expect to pick up Villachor's preferences and vanity adornments.
Just as well you did, Rochelle said. Unfortunately, I'm guessing the scent cue changes every day, and unless we can get into his private fresher cabinet, I don't know how we're going to figure out which one we need.
Kel shook his head.
This just gets better and better. We haven't even started, Rochelle warned.
She keyed her datapad, and a large sphere connected by a short pillar to a wide, flat platform appeared in the center of the room.
Here's the safe itself, she said. It's a 6-meter diameter sphere, the outer part made of duracrete poured over a hull metal mesh.
A sphere?
Winter asked.
Sounds a little crazy.
Crazy like a Twi'lek, Zerba said sourly. A square, a rectangle, has corners you can cut off for quick entry. A sphere doesn't. Even with a full-length lightsaber, it'd take you forever to whittle off enough to get inside.
And you'd probably run into honey traps along the way,
Tavia added.
Poor Duracrete is perfect for tucking in hidden gas pockets and shaped detonite charges.
You said the outer part was Duracrete, Han said. What about the inner part?
That's even worse, Rochelle said. At the center of the sphere is the actual safe, a rectangular, closet-sized cabinet made entirely of Hijarna stone.
Lando looked around. From the puzzled looks on the rest of the faces, the others weren't any more familiar with the term than he was.
Which is?
Dozer prompted.
A hard black stone that's exceptionally hard to cut and absorbs blaster fire without even noticing it, Rochelle said. The most prominent example is a partially ruined fortress on the planet Hijarna. The point is that even Zerba's lightsaber isn't going to get through that. Not in the amount of time we'll have.
Well, Bilichor doesn't cut his way in each time,
Bing pointed out.
Why should we?
Exactly,
Tavia agreed. Her face held her usual quiet disapproval for these things, Lando noted. But at the same time, he could see some professional interest starting to peek through. This was a tactical challenge, and if there was one thing Tavia liked, it was a challenge.
Can you run us through his routine?
Sure, Rochelle said. He comes into the vault after being vetted by the Zeds outside.
Or by the human guards, Lando murmured.
By whoever or whatever's inside the armor, Rochelle agreed. The vault's magnetic seal goes off when he opens the door, of course. He crosses the floor to the hover platform and...
Oh, right,
Rochelle said. Sorry, I forgot to mention that part. The safe is set onto this 10-meter diameter platform that hovers about a meter and a half off the floor on repulsor lifts and slowly moves around the room. I don't know whether it follows a constant circuit or runs a random path.
Okay, now it's just getting ridiculous, Dozer said.
Not really,
Tavia said.
Back when we first started this thing, someone mentioned the possibility of tunneling in from underneath. The other obvious approach is to cut through the ceiling and try to drop onto the safe from above without the guards spotting you. With the safe constantly moving around the room, both of those tactics are now useless. Those must be some really impressive repulsor lifts,
Bink commented.
A sphere of Duracrete that size probably weighs upward of 150 tons.
Easily, Rochelle said. And yes, the repulsor lifts are extremely powerful. So much so that they have their own fusion generator built in, probably in and below that 30-centimeter pillar attaching the sphere to the plate.
The guy's smart, all right,
Bink agreed.
So he walks to the hover platform?
As he approaches the platform, the nearest set of stairs unfolds from beneath it, Rochelle said. By my count, there are 50 of those, because while the platform is moving around the room, it's also slowly rotating.
Randomly, I assume?
Winter asked.
Rochelle nodded.
I caught two small shifts in rotational speed while he was moving across the room. It's a slow rotation, but the speed isn't really important. The bottom line is that because of the rotation, the average intruder won't have any way of knowing where the safe's actual entrance is.
But we do, right?
Bink asked.
I think so,
Rochelle said.
There are multiple sets of paired finger-sized holes, spaced about 4 centimeters apart, all the way around the sphere at about chest height. Bilichor goes to the proper set and inserts the first 2 fingers of his right hand, and the lower part of one of the sphere segments unfolds down onto the platform, leaving a gap about 1.5 meters wide and 2 meters high through the Duracrete that extends all the way into the Hijarna stone center.
Is the cabinet exactly in the middle of the sphere?
Zerba asked.
No, it's about 0.5 meters farther back,
Rochelle said, looking puzzled.
Why do you ask?
Zerba shrugged.
Just curious.
Do we know if the holes are fingerprint keyed?
Tavia asked.
I don't think so, Rochelle said. The finger positioning seemed casual, and he never held them steady enough for a good print reading. Best guess is that it's a body heat trigger, and you just have to know which ones to use.
Or you do all of them, Zerba said.
No need,
Winter said, pointing.
There are two small scuff marks over the pair just to the left of the ones he's using.
I see them,
Bink said.
What's next?
Rochelle again keyed her datapad, and the holoprojector image zoomed in on the sphere, where a segment unfolded the way she'd just described.
We now have a short tunnel, she continued, at the end of which is the door to the inner closet, another slab of Hijana stone with a standard alphanumeric keypad set into it.
The image zoomed in yet again, giving a close-up of the keypad.
Done up in high galactic letters, I see,
Zerba commented.
Arabesh is for the common folk, Lando said dryly. Snobs like Villachor are way too upper level for that.
We did get the code, right?
Tavia said.
We've got this afternoon's code, anyway, Rochelle said. But given the rest of his security, I imagine the code changes regularly. Probably twice a day,
Bink said, standing up and moving forward for a closer look at the image.
That particular model allows for a preset pattern with twice daily changes.
What do you mean by preset? Kel asked.
I mean that instead of some computer elsewhere in the house spitting out a random set of numbers every day that has to be transmitted to the safe and memorized by Villachor,
Tavia added.
And memorized by Villachor,
Bink agreed.
He can precode the safe for weeks or even months' worth of changes.
How does he keep track of all of them?
Dozer asked.
Two likely possibilities, Rochelle said. First, one of the Zeds inside could also have the sequence, and it feeds him the code on his way in. I didn't see that happen, but my angle might not have been right.
Sounds risky, Kel said. Especially since the droids probably get swapped out regularly for recharging and repair.
And transmitting the sequence to a droid is no better than transmitting it directly to the keypad,
Tavia added.
Agreed, Rochelle said. The more likely possibility is that the sequence relates to some pattern Villachor already knows. Dates from family history, names of old girlfriends, vintage years of wine in his cellar, something like that.
So now we have to read his mind, too?
Dozer said heavily.
Great.
Not his mind,
Winter corrected calmly.
Just his history. And we have a known code to start from.
Dozer shook his head.
Still sounds like a candle in a canyon to me.
True, but it's only one canyon,
Winter said.
And once we get through that, Rochelle continued, it looks like everything in the safe is exit tagged.
What does that mean?
Inger asked.
It means that taking anything past the mansion's walls will trigger alarms all across Marblewood,
Zerba explained.
More than just alarms, Rochelle said. From the old purchase records, it looks like Villachor has also installed a spike ring fence around the mansion. It's like a forest of close-spaced vertical poles a few centimeters apart that pop straight out of the ground when triggered, she added, looking at Inger. The posts usually carry enough current to stun or kill. High-security places sometimes use them as a last-ditch defense against theft, Bink said.
You need an airspeeder to get over one, and even then you can't get too close, or the current will arc up to you and fry your repulsor lifts. Depending on how high this one is, it may squeeze you close enough against the umbrella shield that you'd be effectively trapped inside,
Tavia said.
So we'll definitely want to shut the system down before we make our move,
Inger concluded, nodding.
Which we probably can't, Rochelle said. This kind of system usually includes a fine mesh throughout all the walls, which runs a low-level electrostatic field through all the doors and windows. It's self-contained and decentralized, and the only way to knock it out is to basically cut back the wall for about 2 meters around whatever door you plan to use.
She considered.
Of course, once you do that, I suppose you really don't need the door anymore.
So what we need to do is make sure that when the alarm goes off, no one's in any shape to respond,
Zerba said.
Maybe we could gas the place.
Bink shook her head.
You'll never get that much gas in without getting caught.
And it wouldn't work on the droids anyway, Kel added. We'll also need enough detonite to blow up a section of the fence, and enough time to plant it.
So we just make sure they're all too busy to respond?
Lando asked, looking at Han.
Is that the plan?
Mostly,
Han said.
Is that everything, Rochelle?
Yes, Rochelle said. Oh, except that the room directly above the vault is the guard-ready room, where Villachor's security people hang out when they're not on duty.
Luckily, most of them will be on duty during the honorings,
Han pointed out.
Thanks, Rochelle. At least now we know what we're up against.
Yeah, I'm sure gonna sleep better tonight,
Dozer growled.
Glad to hear it,
Han said in that innocent, not quite sarcastic tone he did so well.
That's it for tonight. Better get some sleep. Tomorrow's gonna be busy.
Standing up, he walked over and sat down beside Rochelle, murmuring to her and gesturing at the hollow. The others, taking the cue, got up and filed out. Lando waited until everyone else was gone.
A word?
He asked.
Sure,
Han said, turning away from his quiet conversation.
You want me to leave? Rochelle asked.
No, I'd appreciate your input, Lando said. Bink said earlier that you or Dozer was going to have to take my place.
Yes, he did, Han agreed. You want to put in your vote?
Lando nodded.
I vote for me.
Rochelle blinked. Han's face went into an unreadable sabacc mode.
You just got grabbed, he reminded Lando.
And got sprung, Lando countered. I'm with an organization who doesn't think twice about luring senior Black Sun officials away. Remember? A failed kidnapping shouldn't even throw me off my stride.
Han turned to Rochelle.
What do you think?
He has a point, she said reluctantly. Especially if Bink's right about Villachor himself not being involved. Whoever was behind the grab will still have to work around Marblewood security. And they'll now have to work around Lando's group as well. And since they don't know the size or extent of his team, they'll need to tread carefully.
But you'll certainly need more security.
Indra's voice came from the hall. Lando turned, feeling a flicker of annoyance. Hadn't it been clear that he'd stayed behind because he wanted to talk to Han alone? Apparently it hadn't, at least not to Inger.
Something we can do for you?
Han asked, way more politely than Lando would have.
I was thinking about security for whoever goes back into Marblewood,
Inger said, coming the rest of the way into the room. He looked like he was planning to sit down, but he glanced at Lando's expression, and apparently thought better of it.
It occurred to me that the weapons cache Winter found for you might have some smaller blasters we could borrow.
We don't need any more blasters. Whoever goes in will just take Chewie with him.
Inger's single eye widened.
Chewie?
Sure, why not? Han said. There were plenty of Wookiees there the other 2 days.
Wookiees are in high demand as bodyguards for the Iltar City elite, Rochelle confirmed.
Yes, but...
Inger clamped his lips tightly shut.
Look, I know you have to play confident in front of...
His eye flicked to Lando.
Everyone else. But this is insane. You can't possibly believe that we can quietly break into something like that.
He nodded at the hollow floating overhead.
You got a better idea? Han asked.
A direct frontal assault,
Inger said bluntly.
We bring in more of your friends. Hit the place while security's busy with the honorings.
Whoa, whoa,
Lando interrupted. He never really liked Inger, but he hadn't been able to put his finger on exactly why. Now he knew. The man was an idiot.
Who do you think we are? The 501st? An attack on Marblewood would be instant suicide.
Of course it would be risky,
Inger countered.
But remember the payoff at the end. You can hire a lot of mercenaries for 163 million credits.
Credits on hand, yes, Lando countered. Credits promised? Isn't so good a draw.
I know,
Inger said. He huffed out his breath.
But I don't see any other way to get in.
Me neither,
Han said.
Lucky for us, we don't have to.
What do you mean? Rochelle asked.
I mean, we don't have to get in,
Han repeated patiently.
All we need is for Villachor to bring everything out.
What?
Inger demanded, his eye narrowing.
Now come on! Villachor's not going to just bring the credits and files out and hand them to you.
I didn't say he was, Han said. But if he thinks the vault's under threat, he'd have a good reason to move everything to a safer location. That's when we take it away from him.
No!
Inger insisted.
We can't do it that way.
Why not?
Inger's eye flicked to Lando.
Because it won't work,
he said, speaking as if trying to explain something to a 5-year-old.
He might move the blackmail files if you worry him enough. But he's not likely to bother moving the credits.
Well, then we just get the files, Han said. I thought we decided they're more valuable on the open market than a few credit tabs anyway.
Not without a cryodex, they aren't,
Inger insisted.
No, if we're going to pull this off, we have to actually get in there. We have to.
Fine. Opinion noted.
Han looked at Rochelle and Lando.
Anyone else have any thoughts they want to add to the pot?
Something in his tone warned Lando that the proper answer was no.
Maybe later, he said. I'm thinking I'll grab a quick snack, assuming Dozer's left anything for the rest of us, and get to bed.
Me too,
Rochelle said, tapping her datapad and shutting off the holoprojector. Except for the snack part. Good night, all. Lando half expected Inger to follow him into the kitchen and to try to argue some more against Han's new plan. Luckily for Inger, he didn't. Lando and Inger disappeared down the hallway. Han waited a couple more seconds just to be sure, then turned back to Rochelle.
Can we be ready in 2 days?
Not a chance, she said. Zerba's still working on the Silk Tearaway outfits, and Tavia and the others only have about half the scramblers they'll need.
And there's still no way to test them?
Not unless you want to try one out during the honoring of moving water the day after tomorrow.
Han shook his head.
Too risky. What we get to see, they get to see.
Yes. Rochelle studied his face. It's starting to come apart, isn't it?
I don't know, Han admitted. Maybe a little. I never bought into this whole Kazadi story that Inger's buddy pitched. At least not the part about him being one of Shizor's top people. But if he's really the guy in charge now, he might bring down the hammer faster than we thought.
But it might also force Villachor's hand, Rochelle pointed out. I realize that this whole side-switching offer was just so we could get Tavia's data card into the vault. But if we can genuinely talk him into defecting, we might get the credits and files with a whole lot less work.
Not a chance, Han said firmly. Not now that one of the Fallen has stepped in. Whoever it is, he's pretty well showed that he can commandeer Black Sun's assets on Wukar. If he even suspects that Villachor's thinking about jumping ship, that's it for Villachor. He has to know that.
I suppose, Rochelle said, still eyeing him closely. Which also means there's no way you can talk him into transferring the files elsewhere, because that move would look exactly the same as him absconding with them.
Nope, not a chance of that either,
Han agreed.
So why did you tell Inger that was the new plan?
Mostly to see his reaction, Han said, standing up. I'm heading to bed. Don't let Tavia sleep in. We've only got 4 days until the fire honoring, and we're going to need all the scramblers we can get.
I'll make sure she and the others are up with the sun, Rochelle promised. What are you going to do about Villachor? He's expecting to meet Lando's boss at the honoring of moving water the day after tomorrow.
I guess I'll have to stall him, Han said. We can work that out tomorrow.
He headed toward the hallway and his room.
So did you? Rochelle asked.
Did I what?
Did you find out whatever it was you were looking for with Inger?
Han grimaced.
Yeah, I think so, he said. Turn out the lights on your way to bed, okay?
Chapter 14.
The work of gearing up for the honoring of moving water had been going on all day, and from the occasional glimpses Dozer had caught through the suite windows, it looked like it was going to be as spectacular as the previous two honorings had been. But that was for tomorrow. Right now, for the next few minutes, the only thing on Dozer's mind was the Marblewood security guard getting tiredly out of his land speeder in front of his home in a middle-class part of the city. Han had assured him the man wouldn't simply shoot him down on the spot. That wasn't the way even Black Sun dealt with people doing odd but non-threatening things. Han had promised that the man would simply listen, take the package, and let Dozer walk away. Han was always persuasive, but he wasn't always right. Especially given that they knew nothing about the guard except that he worked the early morning shift at Marblewood. They didn't know his name, his history, or anything else. They hadn't even known his address until Dozer followed him home. Fortunately, with Rochelle and her computer available to backtrack the address, they now also knew his name was Freewin Bromley. He was working on getting a satchel out of the back seat, his bright blonde hair shaded by the airspeeder's roof. Dozer walked up behind him and cleared his throat.
Excuse me.
Bromley was every bit as good as one would expect from a man who worked for Villachor. He dropped the satchel back onto the seat and spun around in a smooth, fluid turn that left him facing Dozer with his hand in an easy grabbing distance of his holstered blaster. A single, equally fluid glance took in Dozer and the entire area around him. Yes, he asked, his tone perfectly neutral.
Quickline courier service,
Dozer said, tapping his nameplate.
Got a package for Freewin Bromley? That you?
Yes, Bromley said, his eyes narrowing. I haven't ordered anything.
All I know is that I was hired to bring this to you,
Dozer said, lifting his security case and popping the lid.
Here we go.
He pulled out a small, wrapped package and held it out. Bromley made no move to take it. What is it?
How should I know?
Dozer countered. He held out the package another second, then squatted down and set it on the driveway.
Fine. You don't want it? Just leave it there. I've got a schedule to keep. Have a peaceful evening.
He straightened up, gave Bromley a polite nod, then turned and started back down the driveway toward his land speeder.
Hey!
Dozer stopped, his throat tight.
Yes?
I don't want it, Bromley called. Come back and get it.
Can't do that, Dozer said. You don't want it, give it away or feed it to the fish. Whatever you want.
He started walking away again, his entire back a mass of tense muscles. Sooner or later, probably before Dozer was out of sight, Bromley's curiosity would get the better of him, and he would open the package. And while 500 credits didn't qualify as a windfall, it should be more than enough to grab some serious attention, both from Bromley and eventually from Shikoa and Villachor. He half expected Bromley to chase him back to his land speeder, but again, the man had been well trained. Either Dozer was an innocent courier, in which case confronting him wouldn't gain him anything, or else he was part of a serious bribery team, and anyone who so blatantly tried such a thing on a Black Sun guard surely would be smart enough to have arrived with backup. No. Bromley's best move right now would be to take the package inside and immediately call in the incident to his superiors at Marblewood. Or he could just pocket the credits, but that really would be too much to hope for. Still, Dozer had two other guards on his list to follow home as their shifts ended. Maybe one of them would be gracious enough to accept the bribe. Hopefully, none of them would be discourteous enough to shoot him in the back. Shikoa had never liked the Festival of Four Honorings. Even as a kid, he'd found the spectacle too long, the venues too crowded, the food too weird, and the shows alternating between bombastic and boring. As an adult, he'd learned to enjoy some of the food, and even more, some of the drinks. Still, he'd continued to find the shows long and predictable. As head of Marblewood Security, he'd learned to utterly hate the event. He understood why Villachor liked to host one of the celebrations. It raised his status among Wukar's upper echelons,
which in turn brought more unsuspecting flies within range of Black Sun's webs. The festival also provided perfect cover for clandestine meetings with those flies, who were already trapped, as well as giving anonymity to potential new contacts with arms dealers, smugglers, and spice merchants. If the price for all those meetings had been merely the cost to feed and entertain a sizable fraction of Iltar City's population, he would have considered it credits well spent. But the food and fireworks were only the snowy crest of the mountain. Having crowds of unwashed citizens wandering around the grounds strained Shakoa's security forces to the limit. The oblivious or drunk pounded on locked doors, tripped over furniture, damaged serving droids, and sometimes started fights. At least once per festival, his men had to roust a pickpocket or two and relieve various thieves of items both valuable and petty. It was an extra strain and cost that Villachor never considered. And it was a cost that, if Shakoa did his job properly, Villachor shouldn't even notice. Except this year. This year was grimly, darkly different. The mysterious Glitterstim merchant. The Cryodex man. The flash bomb incident outside Azeel's suite at the Lulina Crown Hotel. The still unexplained firefight at the half-abandoned Golivir Industrial Complex, which might or might not have had something to do with one of the other three. And now, just earlier this afternoon, the bizarre attempts to bribe three of his men. It was Kazadi's fault, of course. Shakoa had no doubts on that score. Whether the Fallen and his entourage had done something directly to cause all this chaos, or whether their mere presence had sparked it, was largely irrelevant. Either way, Kazadi was still the focal point. And so, as he had most of the previous nights, Shakoa had drifted off to sleep with unfriendly thoughts of Kazadi and his people floating through his mind. Which, he dimly supposed, made it only fitting and proper that Kazadi's face was the first thing he saw when he was jolted violently out of that same deep sleep.
"You will be silent,"
Kazadi said, his voice soft and yet utterly vicious as Shakoa's hand reflexively tried for the blaster under his pillow. A wasted effort. His arms were already pinned solidly to the bed.
"I will ask questions. You will answer them, or you will die. Do you understand?"
Shakoa nodded, a barely perceptible movement of his head that was all he could accomplish with yet another hand entwined in his hair and a blade resting against his throat.
"Good," Kazadi said. "Tell me about the two men who came to see Master Villachor yesterday in his vault."
"He didn't..." Shakoa broke off, fighting to work moisture into his mouth and fighting even harder to keep his voice from shaking with fear. A small part of him recognized that his terror wasn't real, but was being driven by Fallen pheromones. But that knowledge did him little good.
"He didn't take them into the vault," he managed. "Just to the anteroom."
"What did they do there?"
Shakoa swallowed, his throat brushing unpleasantly against the knife blade, wondering fleetingly what he could say. Villachor was his superior, and Villachor had ordered him and the others not to say anything about that visit. But he had no choice. A lie, or even a half-truth, and his own gushing blood would be the last thing he ever saw.
"The visitors claimed they had a cryodex,"
he gasped. Something in Kazadi's expression changed.
"And did they?"
"Yes," Shakoa said. "Master Villachor had them bring it to him so he could test it and see if it actually worked."
"Test it how?"
Again, Shakoa struggled with his conscience and his orders. But orders were one thing. Death was something else.
"He brought a data card from the vault,"
he admitted reluctantly.
"He wanted to see if their cryodex could decrypt it."
Kazadi's eyes flashed with anger, and Shakoa braced himself for death. But the blade against his throat didn't move.
"And could it?"
"Yes," Shakoa said. "They decrypted the file on a hook named Morg Nar on Bespin. He supposedly tried to drive out Jabba's people, but is secretly working with him."
"I presume you checked this out?"
Shakoa started to nod,
remembered the knife.
Yes.
Kazadi looked briefly at someone outside Shikoa's field of view, then turned back.
Tell me about Thorstein, Bromley, Usior, and Tallboy.
Shikoa frowned, trying frantically to figure out what those four particular guards had in common. But he couldn't think of anything.
Well, the first three had bribes delivered to them this afternoon,
he said, stalling for time.
But Tallboy didn't.
He broke off as it suddenly hit him.
He was bribed too? Possibly, Kazadi said. All I know is that the first bribe was sent to him.
I don't understand,
Shikoa said.
He never reported it.
Because he never knew about it, Kazadi said. At least not about this particular bribe. Unbeknownst to him, Lord Azil had appropriated his name for use in various transactions at the Lulina Crown Hotel. The incident 6 days ago, when the small bomb was thrown at his suite, also involved a messenger delivering what appeared to be a bribe to that name.
Shikoa felt his eyes narrow, as some of the stranger aspects of that event suddenly became clear.
That's why you had the investigation halted, he said. You didn't want the bribe part to come out in case Tallboy was actually involved in something.
Correct,
Kazadi said, an edge of unspoken threat in his voice.
And I still don't want it coming out.
I understand,
Shikoa said. Kazadi's eyes narrowed as he again glanced briefly away.
But Tallboy himself is of no especial importance, he said. The larger question is not which of your guards received bribes and reported them, but which ones received bribes and didn't report them.
My men are loyal, Your Excellency,
Shikoa said, again fighting the quaver in his voice. He already knew what happened to people in Black Sun who betrayed their loyalty.
I'm certain they are,
Kazadi agreed.
But are they loyal to Master Villachor, or are they loyal to Black Sun?
Shikoa swallowed again.
Surely those loyalties are the same,
he said as firmly as he could.
Perhaps,
Kazadi said.
Perhaps not. Now that Master Villachor has confirmed that the stranger's cryodex is indeed genuine, what are his plans for it, and for them?
Finally, some relatively safe ground.
He's leading them on, hoping to learn who they work for,
Shikoa said.
If he can't draw them out for destruction, he should at least be able to obtain a spare cryodex for Prince Shizor.
A noble goal,
Kazadi said.
Yet yesterday he had the cryodex in a mansion full of armed men. Why didn't he take it then?
Shikoa swallowed again before he remembered not to do that.
The cryodex and cage were booby-trapped,
he said.
Detonite!
He felt his eyes widen as another piece fell into the puzzle.
That firefight at the Golovia complex. You were able to get the case open?
No,
Kazadi said, and Shikoa's already pounding heart picked up its pace a little as the other glared off into space.
I had ordered the services of two of the local police to take Master Villachor's visitors for questioning. When I learned of the detonite, I also brought in Master Dempsey.
So that was where Villachor's explosives expert had disappeared to, and why he'd been so nervous and shaken when he returned to his lab in the North Wing a few hours later.
Only their friends intervened?
For the first and last time,
Kazadi said, his voice heavy with menace.
The only question remaining is whether they will die quickly or slowly.
He cocked his head to the side.
Is there anything more you wish to tell me? Others, perhaps, who might be involved in this conspiracy against Black Sun.
There's a girl,
Shikoa said.
A human woman. Young, black hair. Very, well, attractive to human eyes.
And you think she wouldn't be attractive to my non-human ones?
I don't know,
Shikoa said,
hurrying to get off the subject.
She's attached herself to me, probably hoping I can get her inside the mansion. She says her name's Catherine, but it's undoubtedly an alias.
And you believe her to be with a cryotex merchant?
I don't know, Shakoa said. She might just be a regular thief, hoping to rob the mansion. We get some of those at every festival.
You'll keep close watch on her.
A faint smile briefly creased Kazati's lips.
You'll see to that personally.
Of course, Shakoa confirmed. Perhaps we should...
He broke off as the knife suddenly pressed harder against his throat.
Silent, unless asked the question,
Kazati reminded him coldly. He looked past Shakoa again and twitched his head in an unspoken order. There was the sound of movement from that direction, a shuffling of multiple feet, and out of the corner of his eye, Shakoa saw Villachor step into view, an armed Faline on either side of him.
Congratulations, Master Villachor,
Kazati said with his ironic courtesy.
As you said, your people are indeed loyal.
As am I,
Villachor countered, with the same hard-edged courtesy. He was standing stiff and defiant, but Shakoa could see a sheen of sweat on his face.
And as you heard, again, my goal is and always has been to find out who this Querv and Bib are, and whom they're working for. Nothing more.
Perhaps,
Kazati said, his tone still courteous.
Still, the temptation to take the blackmail files for yourself must be nearly overwhelming. Especially with those files currently accessible only to you.
Shakoa cleared his throat quietly.
I believe Master Shakoa was about to make a suggestion, Villachor said. I'd like to hear it.
Kazati considered, then looked down at Shakoa.
Speak, he invited.
The knife eased back a fraction.
I was going to suggest that if Querv and Bib are trying to steal the files, perhaps we should simply move them. So far, all their activities have been under cover of the crowds at the honorings. If we move the files tonight, when no one's watching, any future efforts they might make will be against an empty vault.
Have you a suggestion as to where they should go?
Kazati asked.
Your ship was secure enough to protect them for the journey here, Shakoa pointed out. There's also Master Villachor's country estate in Baka province. The safe there isn't as secure as the Marblewood vault, but the thieves would never think to look for the files there.
How do you know?
Kazati countered.
How do you know such a transfer isn't exactly what they're hoping for? How do you know they don't have people already in place at Baka in the Altar City spaceport, waiting for us to deliver the files straight into their hands? How do you know they don't have people lying in wait outside the Marblewood wall, even now for the airspeeders and landspeeders that would take the files away?
Shakoa
looked helplessly at Villachor, but Villachor wasn't looking at him. Villachor was looking at Kazati. Thinking, measuring, perhaps scheming. Looking for a way to reinstate himself in the Faline's good graces. Trying to save himself.
You make a good and valid point, Your Excellency, Villachor said. Until we know the full extent of our enemy's reach, we can't afford to make any assumptions.
On the contrary, Kazati said. There are two assumptions we can certainly make. First, they've offered you a functional cryodex. Therefore, they hope to lure you into treason against Black Sun.
Which won't happen, Villachor said firmly.
We shall hope not,
Kazati said darkly, and again Shakoa felt his heart rate briefly increase.
Second, we know they're trying to subvert your security force.
He looked down at Shakoa,
and that they may have succeeded.
Never.
Shakoa wanted to say, but he remained silent. One warning about unsolicited comments was all he was likely to get.
Since we can no longer trust your men, Kazati continued, You will immediately withdraw all human guards from the vault. From this point on, only the 501Z droids will be stationed in that area.
Shakoa felt his breath catch in his throat. That was a terrible idea. The whole point of mixing droids and humans was that potential intruders wouldn't know which they were facing at any given time. Sorosub claimed their Zeds were impossible to break or deprogram, but nothing in the universe was truly impossible. If Quirv's people found out that the vault was guarded solely by droids, they might find a fatal weakness in their mechanism or programming and exploit it. From the expression on Villator's face, it was clear he was thinking the same thing. But it was also clear that he had no intention of arguing the point. "As you wish," he said.
"I'll give the order immediately."
"Good," Kazadi said.
"The guards can be reassigned to festival duty. Perhaps a few extra eyes will provide a better view of those who seek to rob us." "You did say immediately, did you not, Master Villator?"
Villator's lip twitched as he pulled out his comlink and gave the night duty officer the order for the guard change.
"Will there be anything else, Your Excellency?"
he asked as he returned the comlink to its holder.
"Not for now,"
Kazadi said. His eyes flicked down to Shakoa, back to Villator.
"The honoring of moving water begins in 8 hours. You should both get some rest."
He turned and strode out of Shakoa's view, followed by the Faline flanking Villator. A few seconds later, the knife at Shakoa's throat and the hands gripping his arms and hair also disappeared. There was the sound of a door opening and then closing, and Shakoa and Villator were alone. Shakoa looked up at his boss, trying to come up with something to say. If Villator took Shakoa's admissions to Kasadi as a betrayal, he was dead. But the words wouldn't come, and even with Kazadi and the Faline's pheromone tricks gone, his pulse continued to pound in his neck. Because down deep, Shakoa knew his statements to Kazadi were a betrayal. Finally, Villator stirred. Shakoa braced himself.
"He's right about the honoring," Villator said calmly. "Go back to sleep. I'll see you in the morning."
Without another word, he left. Shakoa took a deep breath, staring at the closed door. Something critical had just happened, he knew. Villator had come to a decision, only Shakoa had no idea what that decision was. Slowly he rolled over onto his side, like he was really going to get any sleep now.
Chapter 15.
It had been said that there were only three absolutes in life: death, taxes, and bad liquor. But as Lando strolled across the Marblewood grounds, he decided he could add a fourth to the list. When you traveled with a Wookiee, people would move out of your way. Of course, Chewbacca's 2-meter-plus height also made the two of them easier for Villator security men to spot as they moved through the crowds. But then, that was the whole idea.
"Yeah, I see them,"
Lando said, making a face. He'd expected the entire Marblewood security force to be on their tail today. He hadn't expected to find himself also being watched by a pair of Faline. He especially hadn't expected one of those Faline to be the would-be interrogator from the factory incident 2 nights earlier.
"Don't worry. They aren't gonna try anything," Lando assured him. "Not here."
Chewie warbled a not entirely confident comment.
"Sure, they're probably mad," Lando agreed. "But they want to question us, not kill us. At least not right away."
Or so he hoped. The logic certainly tracked, and most of the people Lando had faced across Sabacc tables over the years would follow that same line of reasoning. But there were species out there who would unhesitatingly pass up profit and vested self-interest in favor of immediate revenge. The Hutts tended that way. Maybe the Faline did, too. Still, they were on Villator's grounds, and in the middle of one of his favorite bits of self-promotion. Surely he would keep them in line. Which wasn't to say he and Chewie should press their luck.
"Over there," he said,
pointing away from the loitering Pauline. That hanging waterfall looks interesting. Let's wander over and take a closer look. Right, Lando confirmed with a tight smile. Looks like there's a spot right beside those other two Wookiees.
I have to say,
Bink commented as she peered up into Shakoa's face,
that you really look tired.
Thanks, he said dryly. You look lovely, too.
You're too kind,
Bink said, smiling cheerfully. She let the smile fade into concern.
But I was being serious,
she continued.
I guess people don't realize how hard something like this is on the folks who run the show. How long since you had a real night's sleep?
It's been a while, he conceded. Like you said, things get pretty busy during the festival.
Well, you need to make that time,
she said firmly, reaching over and taking hold of his right upper arm.
If you don't get your rest, you...
She broke off as he twisted his arm back out of her grip, simultaneously pushing her hand away with his left hand.
Gun hand, he said shortly. Never do that.
I'm so sorry,
Bink apologized, screwing up her face into her best embarrassed wince.
Look, I can see you're not in the mood to just relax and have fun. Maybe I'd better go and let you concentrate on your work.
No, that's all right, he said hastily, as she started to back away. I'm just a little twitchy this morning, that's all.
He took her hand and gently pulled her around to his left side.
Come on, let's go see if they've got the Ambrosia steamer up and running.
All right,
Bink said, wrapping her hand possessively around his left arm. This time he didn't push her away.
But only if you promise to relax and have one of them with me.
A small one, only, he said.
They got two steps before he suddenly changed direction.
On second thought, let me show you something else first, he said, angling off through the crowd. The Hanging Waterfall is one of the Honoring's highlights, and it's about to go into its quarter-hour show. We'll watch it and then go get the Ambrosia.
Sounds interesting,
Bink said, a small red flag waving in the back of her brain.
He was up to something. New orders via his collar clip comlink? Probably.
Shifting her grip on his arm, Bink snuggled in a little closer. If the comlink speaker hadn't been focused correctly, she might be able to get in close enough to hear what was going on. Unfortunately, Villachor's tech people hadn't been that careless. But even as she eased casually away again, a hint of an odd scent touched her nostrils. Not enough for her to identify, but enough to tell her that she'd smelled it before, and that it was something significant. It would be risky to move that close again so soon. But she had time. The scent was on Shakoa, and Shakoa had clearly been ordered to keep her close. There would be opportunities later to chase it down. More important right now was figuring out this sudden change in his schedule. And then, just ahead, a pair of Kubas moved aside, giving her a momentarily clear view of the hanging waterfall Shakoa had mentioned. The waterfall and the big furry shape of Chewbacca towering over the crowd. Apparently, whoever had been watching Lando had decided it might be fun to throw Bink at him and see if the two of them knew each other. Mentally, she shook her head. Of all of Han's group, she and Lando were probably the two least likely to show any of the reaction Shakoa was hoping for. Still, points for effort. Patting Shakoa's arm, prattling on in the breezy, carefree way she knew he'd come to expect from her, she settled her mind for the immediate task ahead.
Over by the Hanging Waterfall, Villachor was saying into his comlink as Han sauntered into eavesdropping range. Take the girl over, spring her on him, and see if they recognize each other.
Han felt his throat tighten. He'd known ahead of time that Villachor would be taking it up a notch today, and if Villachor didn't, then Kazadi or Azeel certainly would. Trying to figure out how the various newcomers into their lives were connected was the obvious first step. Still, throwing a ghost thief at a professional gambler would probably be a complete waste of time. Both Bink and Lando were more than capable of controlling their expressions and behavior. Now it was Han's turn. He squared his shoulders. He could do this. He'd faced down Jabba the Hutt, Imperial Commander Nyclass the Sadist, and any number of other thugs and bandits. Villachor was just the latest in a long line. A couple more greeters and well-wishers wandered up to Villachor, babbling their thanks for the show under the watchful gaze of his two bodyguards. Han waited until they moved on, then walked over.
"Nice show, Master Villachor," he said.
"Thank you," Villachor said, giving him a quick up-and-down look. "I'm glad you're enjoying it."
"I hear you have a really nice collection of airspeeders and landspeeders," Han continued, gesturing toward the garage at the north end of the mansion. "Any chance you'll be bringing them out to show us?"
"No, I don't think so," Villachor said with the same forced smile he was giving everyone else. "Not until ordering of moving vehicles is added to the festival."
"I suppose not,"
Han said. He moved a step closer and lowered his voice.
"What about the blackmail files? You gonna bring them out?"
Villachor's smile vanished, and both bodyguards shifted their hands to their concealed blasters.
"Excuse me," Villachor said quietly.
"Easy," Han soothed. "I'm just here to talk."
"Then talk fast," Villachor snarled, hissing out the last word. "Did you bring the item?"
"No, and I'm not going to," Han said. "Not after what happened two nights ago."
"That wasn't my doing,"
Villachor insisted. He was starting to recover, and Han could see the little computer chips in his mind starting to spin again.
"Are you the boss Quirv promised to bring me?"
"No, and you're not going to see him either," Han said. "If that wasn't you, who was it?"
"A misguided colleague," Villachor said. "Someone who felt we needed to know more about you before our discussions continued. If you didn't bring the item and were not discussing terms, why are you here?"
"Mostly as a courtesy," Han said. "I wanted to warn you that another player has joined the game."
Villachor's face changed, just enough to show that the guards had indeed reported Dozer's off-duty visits.
"What do you mean?"
"You know what I mean," Han said. "Someone's going around bribing your guards."
"Trying to bribe them," Villachor corrected. "All the men who were approached turned in the credits."
"You sure about that?" Han countered. "Because the numbers I'm hearing say that at least 5 of them took the packages and kept their mouths shut."
Abruptly, a blaster muzzle jabbed into Han's ribs.
"Who?" Villachor demanded. "Give me their names."
"I don't have their names,"
Han growled, glaring at the guard pressing the blaster into his side.
"I told you it's someone else who's doing that."
"A girl, perhaps," Villachor suggested. "Black hair, medium height."
"I don't know,"
Han said, biting out each word.
"We don't know who they are."
"Well, maybe they are you," the guard growled.
"Use your head," Han growled back. "Our group is trying for a nice, quiet, civilized recruitment. Why would we risk that by throwing credits at employees who don't even matter?"
He raised his eyebrows.
"No offense."
"None taken," Villachor said. "Put it away, Tob."
Reluctantly, the bodyguard returned the blaster to its hiding place.
"Enough small talk," Villachor continued. "Here's the bottom line. Before I make any decisions, I will meet with someone who has the authority to make me a deal. And I want to see the cryodex work one more time."
"You already got one sample," Han reminded him. "Didn't it pan out good enough for you?"
"Oh, it panned out quite nicely," Villachor assured him. "The inquiries I sent to Bespin have confirmed this Morgnar person your man identified is indeed working for the Hutt."
Han felt his stomach tighten. And if he knew anything about the way Black Sun did things, the inquiry alone was going to blow Nar's cover straight out the airlock.
Jabba was not going to be happy about that.
And when Jabba wasn't happy, everyone connected to him paid the price. The faster they got Inger's credit tabs and Han could pay off his debt, the better.
"But any one-time winner could just be luck," Villachor continued. A second sample will make things more definitive.
That'll be up to the boss, Han said. And before you ask, yes, he's already on Wukar.
Then what's the holdup?
Han looked him straight in the eye.
He's waiting on confirmation that whoever grabbed Corv and Bib is under control.
I can assure you there'll be no repeat of that incident.
No offense, Master Villachor, but he's not looking for confirmation from you, Han said. He's looking for confirmation from us. Don't worry, we're working on it.
I see, Villachor said, his voice subtly shifting tone. Any idea when you and he will deem the time right for such a conference?
Soon, Han promised. I'm hoping I could bring him in 2 days from now during the honoring of Moving Fire.
And if you can't?
We will, Han assured him. If that doesn't work...
Excuse me a moment, Villachor murmured, his eyes flicking somewhere over Han's shoulder as he pulled out his comlink. Shakoa, anything? Never mind. I've been informed that a man who may be yesterday's mystery courier is on the grounds. Yes, that's the one. I think you should take your friend over there and see if they'd like to say hello to each other.
He listened another moment, then closed down the comlink and turned back to Han.
I'm sorry. You were saying...
I was saying that if we can't secure the area by the end of the festival, we should be able to set up a meeting for a day or two afterward,
Han said, keeping his voice and expression calm and unconcerned. So security had spotted Dozer, or at least thought they had, and Villachor was sending Shakoa and Bink over to confront him. Problem was, while Han could trust Bink and Lando to handle the non-recognition game, he wasn't nearly so sure Dozer could pull it off without dropping any of the cues that Shakoa would be watching for. But there was nothing he could do. Villachor was watching, and if he made the slightest move to warn Dozer or to cut short the conversation, the other would be all over it. In fact, that was probably the reason he'd made the call in Han's presence in the first place. Any reaction, and they would have the link between him and Dozer that Villachor obviously suspected. Han could do nothing. Luckily, he didn't have to do anything.
But if you have a moment, he continued smoothly, I have one other thought my boss wanted me to float past you.
Certainly, Villachor said. Come, let's walk.
Uh-oh, Winter said under her breath. She thought she'd said it quietly enough not to be heard, but Rochelle's ears were obviously better than average. Halfway across the room, standing on top of the low serving table, the other woman still caught the muttered word.
Trouble?
She asked.
Nothing serious,
Winter assured her, shifting the electrobinoculars a little as she pulled out her comlink.
Looks like Shakoa's attempt to get Lando and Bink to react to each other has gone flat, so he's going to try it again with Bink and Dozer.
With Dozer?
Rochelle said, sounding worried. That's not exactly nothing.
Hold still, Zerba said testily. You're going to pull out those arm seams again.
I was just trying.
It's okay,
Winter soothed, keying the comlink for Kel. Dozer was being watched, which meant she couldn't call and warn him without the timing looking suspicious. But Kel was under no such surveillance.
Kel, you need to get Dozer out of there,
she said when he answered.
Can you do it without alerting his security playmates?
Sure. You want him all the way out, or just somewhere else on the grounds?
Better make it all the way,
Winter said. Dozer had wanted another look at the Marblewood security setup, but with Shakoa on the prowl, it would be safer to just pull the plug.
You sure? He could play hide and search for a long time without Shakoa ever catching up with him.
Out, and now,
Winter said tartly, her memory flashing with the faces of all the rebel operatives she'd seen push their luck too far.
Okay, okay. You don't have to shout. You want me out too?
Only if you're spotted,
Winter said, scowling to herself. She shouldn't have let the memories get the better of her, especially not with Kel, who was going through the same agony of loss that she was.
Sorry.
It's okay. Don't worry, I'll get him out.
Don't be too hard on him, Rochelle said as Winter put away the comlink.
He's young. The young always believe the dice are on their side.
Enough reason right there to go hard on him,
Winter countered, focusing the electro-binoculars back on Dozer.
I want him to live long enough to grow out of that phase.
Or long enough to learn how to make the dice work for you, Zerpa said. How's it look?
Winter's first impulse was to remind him that she had work to do, that she wasn't exactly loafing over here by the window. But Kel had been alerted in plenty of time. Bink had Shakoa reasonably under control, and Lando, Chewbacca, and Han all seemed to be doing fine. She could probably spare a glance at Zerba's masterpiece. It was well worth it. The last time Winter had seen the outfit, it had been mostly a stack of delicate pieces of red silk. Now, 2 hours later, Zerba had transformed the pieces into an elegant red formal wear dress that could have held its own at one of Queen Briha's formal receptions. In fact, except for the deeper waistline, higher collar, and slightly different shade, it was identical to one that the Queen had worn at Princess Leia's 12th birthday celebration.
Well?
With a jolt, Winter realized she'd been staring as the memories flooded over her.
It's beautiful, she said. The color suits you, Rochelle.
Thanks, Rochelle said wryly. I'd curtsy, except I'd probably pull out more of Zerba's seams.
She shook her head.
I still can't believe I let you talk me into this.
Tavi is busy, Bink's busy, and you're their size, Zerba reminded her.
I know, Rochelle said with a sigh. But there's something fundamentally wrong about asking a woman to stand for a fitting when she's not going to get to wear the dress.
Tell you what, Zerba offered. When this is over, I'll make you one of your very own.
You mean that?
Absolutely.
Zerba ran his fingers gently across the silk.
And I'll even make it one like Tavish that you can wear more than once.
Rochelle chuckled.
That would be nice,
she said dryly. Winter turned back to the window and refocused her electro-binoculars. Dozer was on the move, drifting casually through the crowd and heading toward the double stream of people moving in and out of the grounds. Two of the security men were paralleling him, staying well back but keeping him in sight. Mostly in sight, anyway. There was a spot just before the gate where the positioning of the trees and hedges would temporarily block him from their sight. Keying a comlink to Dozer's number, she got ready.
So, what exactly do you do for Mazik?
Rochelle asked.
Procurement, mostly,
Winter said.
I track through shipping manifests and warehouse throughputs, and find him things he needs and people who are trying to hide their merchandise. The latter he can approach about smuggling work. The former he simply steals.
Sounds like the kind of job where you sit at a computer and don't get shot at, Zerba commented wistfully. Must be nice.
It's not quite that easy,
Winter told him.
I also handle security systems and alarms for him. That means being on site for a lot of the work. But you're right. We mostly don't get shot at.
I hope he pays you well, Zerba said. You don't seem the type who lives for the thrill of the challenge.
Winter shrugged. Mazik's pay scale was fairly tepid, actually. What kept her at the job was the fact that she could use his resources to find and break into supply and weapons storehouses, let the smugglers take what they wanted, and leave the way clear for her Rebel Alliance associates to slip in behind them and gather up the rest. She was pretty sure Mazik at least suspected her secret affiliation, but he'd never said anything. Apparently he was smart enough to see the mutual advantages of their relationship. Though, maybe that was why he paid her as little as he did.
Not really,
she told Zerba.
But it's worth it.
Dozer was nearly to the gate now, walking alongside a group of long-eared buck-tooth lepi, their arms gesticulating wildly as they strode along, chattering among themselves. Winter checked the positions of the security men, then double-checked the covering flora and prattling aliens. As Dozer slipped momentarily out of sight, Winter tapped her comlink's call key. Without breaking stride, Dozer shrugged off his brown jacket, flipped it inside out to show the blue and silver jagged slice pattern on the other side, and put it back on. As he settled it over his shoulders, he pulled a fold-up hat from the jacket's pocket and jammed it onto his head. A moment later, he had passed through the gate, past two security men who were starting to look puzzled as they scanned the crowds marching along in front of them. Winter smiled in satisfaction. There were undoubtedly still cam droids floating around up there, beneath Villachor's umbrella shield, and someone in the monitor room had probably caught the quick change. But the inevitable communication delay between monitor and gate had given Dozer just enough time to slip out. Of course, now they knew he wasn't just an innocent courier, but a part of the mysterious gang throwing bribes at Villachor's people. But that was all right. That part of the plan was over. Hopefully, it had accomplished its goal of making Villachor doubt his guard's trustworthiness. Her smile faded. Trust. That was indeed the Duracrete foundation of every organization. Along with commitment, trust was what ultimately defined whether a group rose to victory or fell to destruction. She trusted her friends and associates in the Rebel Alliance, trusted them implicitly. Could she say the same about this assemblage of thieves and scoundrels that Han and Rochelle had put together? She smiled again, a very private smile this time. Yes. She could trust them. Because Han was more than he seemed. Much more. And before this was over, she promised herself she would make sure she got the whole story. What's happening? Rochelle asked.
He's out,
Winter said.
There. Looks like they're sending someone outside the gate to see if they can spot him.
Zerba snorted.
Fat chance of that.
Not with the zigzag he set up to get back.
Rochelle said, breathing out an audible sigh.
Ah, that was close.
And we're all glad it's over,
Zerba said, starting to sound testy again.
Now, will you please kindly hold still?
Think of it as an insurance policy. Han said. Your own set of blackmail files, already decrypted and ready for your personal use.
You mean for my personal execution? Villachor said darkly. If I had such copies, and Black Sun ever found out, I'd be dead within hours, possibly within minutes.
Probably, Han agreed.
Villachor had mentioned Black Sun's quick retribution twice already in this conversation. From the rumors Han had heard over the years, he was pretty sure that was no exaggeration. But Villachor was still listening.
On the other hand, there's no reason they ever have to find out, Han went on. I bring the cryodex in, we make copies, and you put the copies someplace secure. Maybe mix them in with all your other encrypted documents.
Yes, Villachor murmured. You realize, I presume, that your associate Querb has already made that suggestion.
I know, Han said. I thought it was worth making again.
Worthwhile from my point of view, perhaps, Villachor said. You offer what appears to be an attractive deal, yet ask nothing in return.
Han shrugged.
It's a good faith gesture, he said. Sure, we're interested in the files, but we're much more interested in you, personally. If that kind of deal gets you to join us, we'll figure it was a worthwhile long-term investment.
They walked a few more steps before Villachor spoke again.
Let me offer a compromise, he suggested. When you bring your boss, you also bring the cryodex. I'll watch it work once more and allow you to make copies of 5 files, which you may take with you.
He smiled thinly.
Consider that my good faith gesture.
That sounds reasonable,
Han said, nodding slowly as if thinking it over. The cracks were starting to form in Villachor's resolve. He could hear that much in the man's voice. But those cracks weren't very big. Unless something drastic happened in the next 2 days, there was no way Villachor was going to be ready to desert Black Sun, or even move the blackmail files out of the vault. Which meant they were going to have to go through with the original plan after all. Inger would be pleased by that.
All right, he said. Let me consult with my boss and see what he says.
Villachor snorted.
More delays.
Can't be helped, Han said. If it helps any, we're as anxious to wrap this up as you are.
I'm sure you are.
Pilichor exhaled loudly as he came to a stop.
I trust you'll have some word for me by the honoring of moving fire the day after tomorrow.
Absolutely,
Han promised.
If I can't bring the boss to see you then, I'll at least bring an offer on when you two can meet.
Very well,
Pilichor said. He looked into Han's eyes, and for a moment, Han was startled by the intensity there.
We stand on the edge, my friend. Riches and power beyond compare, or a long and terrifying death. Be very certain you wish to continue.
With an effort, Han matched the other's gaze. No, he didn't want death, fast or slow. But he didn't want riches and power either. At least not the kind Villator was talking about. All he wanted was to be free of Jabba, and then to be free to do what he pleased. But this was still the path to that goal.
I am,
he said firmly.
Good.
The laser intensity of Villator's gaze faded away.
Until the ordering of moving fire, then.
Han nodded.
Good day, Master Villator.
He forced himself to walk sedately the whole way back to the gate. The security guards there obviously had been alerted, and they watched Han closely as he passed, but none of them made any move to stop him. Just the same, he was careful to follow the zigzag path that Dozer had created for travel back to the suite. Just in case. Shikoa tried to hide it, but from the changes in his expression over the past hour, Bink knew the afternoon had been a bust. Not that she was really surprised. She and Lando had played their parts perfectly, walking the balance bar between guilty recognition and the opposite but equally suspicious complete ignoring of each other. She'd had some concerns about Shikoa throwing her at Dozer, but from what she'd been able to glean from Shikoa's side of his comlink communications, it sounded like Dozer had made it out of Marblewood before anyone could pin him down. Given Shikoa's increasingly dark mood, Bink decided as she babbled away cheerfully, he would probably appreciate a good warm hug.
So, anyway... Oh, my stars! Look at the time,
she said, peering at her watch.
I'm sorry, Lapis, but I have to go. My boss has some animate clients in town and wants me to help take them to a high-class restaurant. You know how curious animids are about new cultures.
If he wants to show them Mukar culture, he should bring them here, Shikoa said, his mind clearly on other things.
That's what I said,
Bink